Mason-Dixon line. Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show at the Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, time permitting, you want to be in touch with the program, 251-343-0106. Joining us now on the line, always appreciative of us. Now, he's been on a few times with us before. We got to talk to him a little bit at the State House over the session, but why don't you get him on again? State Representative Reed Ingram. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Doing great. It's just nice not to have to wake up and go into session, I can tell you that. But it's great. I hope you're doing well. Hope the listeners are doing well.
Hey, absolutely. Before we get into some specifics here, 2024 session now in the books, any thoughts coming out of it?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. Went out on me.
Any thoughts coming out of the 2024 session, now that it's wrapped up?
No, I tell you, I think it was the most exhausting session we've had. I've been in since 14, and 2015 was pretty bad. We had two specials, and our speaker was indicted, and so it was a lot of drama. But I think this time was harder. I think 24 was harder than all of those combined. It's just a lot of drama with the gaming and some other stuff that was going on, and it was just kind of putting out fires the whole time, and it was just, I'm glad it's over. I'm glad it's in the rearview mirror.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, a number of things, and this, you explained it to me back in the past about your bill that kind of changed the rules of the game for, I guess, the Dreamers to go to college or public schools here. And I get a lot of questions about this. And like I said, it made sense at the time when you explained it. But kind of walk us through that again and what your intentions were with that piece of legislation.
Yeah, so down in South Alabama is probably the worst part. And, we have we're one of two states that don't allow anybody, if you're illegal, to go to college. And it makes sense. I agree with it. But if you've applied for legal status and you've been waiting, sometimes it's two or three years, and you want to pay your own way to go to college, I think you ought to be able to, enlist when you file for legal status and you're waiting. You just can't go into the service but you can get ready and go. But, it's just as Alabama and South Carolina, the only two states, Texas, Florida, you can go. And federally, they're protected. If they're illegal, they can go to K-12. We have to let them attend K-12, whether you're illegal or applied for legal status or not. And so these are the good citizens. We have probably 300 identified that are going to school in Pensacola, that live in Mobile area, and they're going over across the state line to go to college, and they'll end up with a job over there. These are the people that are coming over for the right reason, or not coming over for the right reason. I don't want any illegals here, but they're attending college for the right reason. Now, we've had to pay, the taxpayers have to pay for their K-12 in every state. But now that they want to pay their own way and go to college or go to a two-year college to learn a trade, they're not allowed in Alabama. I put it to where this bill would be to where if you had filed for legal status and it was going to be amended in the Senate, if you had filed while you were in junior high school. So that gives them 3 to 4 years waiting, more than likely they have already gotten their legal status time they get to college. It passed the House. Every co-sponsor was Republicans on it. And, we just don't want to have these people end up on the street and not working. If they come over here and invested, just like my family came over, my great-grandparents came over, and your great-grandparents more than likely came over, we want them to be a part of the solution and not be part of a problem.
Yeah, like I said, every time it comes up, there's always kind of a little bit of a, I don't say freak out, but like, whoa, what is this? And, Why did you?
It passed committee. It passed committee unanimously. You know, in their majority, Republicans on the floor. Right. I think we may have had 10 or 12 that didn't understand it and voted against it. A couple of them abstained, but you know, it was a bipartisan bill. You know, it's I don't like it, but being you know, them going to college, if they're going to pay their own way and they're going to be part of our workforce shortage, I chair the labor shortage for the state, and that was one of the. Donna Gibbons that's down there, that was one of the things that she had found in her district that a lot of people that are not being able to get into the professional part of working because they can't go to college and get a trade. And so they're moving and going across the state lines and getting that education and going to work.
Well, last question on that. Why did you feel compelled to take up this cause?
Well, I told her since I chaired the committee, I'd be glad to. She was scared of it. She co-sponsored it, but she was just scared to do it because she was a freshman, you know, just didn't want to carry it. But she co-sponsored it, and so did Terry Collins, co-sponsored it. So, the speaker voted for it. Everybody that understood the bill, I think, voted for it. I don't think it's a bad deal at all because these people have applied for legal status. You've had people that applied for legal status and going into the military. I mean, it's no different. Let them go to college if they want to pay their own way. We are tired of paying their way K-12 now that they want to pay their own way and become a dental hygienist or a nurse or somebody like that. I mean, why not? Texas does it. Florida does it. Every state in the union allows them to go to college if they pay their own way except for South Carolina and Alabama. Now we're into a labor shortage, you know, now.
Right.
You know, used to when we weren't in a labor shortage, but now we're in a labor shortage. We've only got 43% of the working, I think it's 24 to 64 that are participating in the jobs. So, you know, we need more people to step up. We have a hard time, you know, getting anybody to be a nurse. A lot of these nurses are being traveling nurses. So we have a hard time finding jobs for just about any profession.
Representative, the reason we wanted to get you on here today, you didn't make the news, but the chief of staff for the mayor of Montgomery kind of made the news and mentioned you by name about this constitutional carry bill that the state passed a couple of years back. Tell me something here. You had a bill that you didn't get an opportunity to file last session, but. That you're looking at, I guess, in the future. What do you want to talk about? What you want to do here with Alabama's gun laws?
Well, I co-sponsored constitutional carry, and you know, I voted yes, and I will continue to vote yes. I have no bill to dismantle constitutional carry. I think everybody should have the right to carry a gun. I carry one every day. I've got two in my truck, one on my hip or in my pocket. And I don't want to take anybody's right to take away. You know, we've had a problem in the state and more, you know, in some of these larger municipalities with these minors that are carrying guns and going around and saying, hey, you know, I don't have to carry my ID. I can just tell them, make up a name and give them a date of birth and somebody that doesn't have a warrant on them. And I get to keep my gun. So they've learned not to keep it up. You know, carry an ID on them and thought that was the shield that they needed if they were 15, 16 years old. Constitutional carry applies to people that are 19 and above. And so I think, you know, the problem is the law enforcement in Montgomery just didn't know the law. And the law is that they've got to have an ID. And they came to me, the sheriff came to me and said, hey, we've got a problem with constitutional carry. And I made a knee-jerk reaction and said, I think everybody needs to carry an ID. You know, and I'm not going to bring any bill to dismantle or do anything to constitutional carry because I co-sponsored it. It's a great bill, and we don't need to do anything with it. What we need to do is hold these municipalities accountable for their crime that's going up because, you know, when a murder happens or a felony happens in one of these municipalities, the state has to house them, the county tries them, and we have to keep them as long as they're sentenced. The cities have no skin in the game. in Montgomery, Alabama, crime has gotten out of control when you're down more than 40% on law enforcement. And you're doing something wrong when your sheriff's department in that same county is full and is not hiring. And you get down 240 police officers in Montgomery, then your leadership is something's going wrong. And that's what I'm talking about on CHIP. If you look at 1819 News, that clip that was on there, that's what I'm talking about, is holding these cities accountable, that we take the city over as far as the law enforcement is concerned. They keep paying the bill, but we put the top man in, the police chief in, to making sure that the day-to-day operations are done correctly. The mayor has no more control.
Well, it's sort of like what they do, like the Montgomery Public Schools some years back, when the schools continue to fail, and despite whatever remedies they tried, the state had to come in and do a takeover, and then they kind of cede control back to the local jurisdiction over time.
Yeah, Montgomery MPS was changing superintendents like they were socks. You know, they'd get a good one in here and couldn't control him or her when they wanted to do the right thing, and they wanted to get into the hiring and the firing and hiring people that were, you know, friends and part of a sorority and a fraternity, instead of hiring somebody that was, you know, qualified, and they couldn't handle that one, so they just get out of them. You know, they had five in like 6 years one time on the superintendent, I think. And so it's the same thing. I mean, we're going through police chiefs that's had, you know, multiple sexual harassments in other states, and he hires them because I heard it was kin to him. I don't know that for a fact, but, you know, you just can't hire somebody like that and then put somebody else in and then, you know, put them on administrative leave. And it's just, the morale is not, you know, not good. So we would bring a top person in to be that position and take it over until, you know, probably for a calendar year at least. And I'm working with the AG on this bill and with Aaliyah, and we'll have the bill hopefully drafted right by Friday. But the constitutional carry does not ever need to be touched. We all need a right to carry a gun if you're legal enough to carry it and old enough to carry it, and you don't have a felon out there. You're not, you know, somebody that's committed murder and on bail or something like that.
Well, tell me something, because you're dust up with Chip Hill, the chief of staff there in Montgomery, and they want to make constitutional carry in the Alabama legislature the fall guy for their criminality, for their rise in violent crime. And I was telling our audience down here in Mobile about what happened on the Atlanta Highway. And here's the deal, though. Like, I think it was Russell Betzel, your colleague in the House, said this: we all exist under the same law, the same framework of laws, and it's only a handful of places that are having problems. So that, you know, there's a constant, which is the state's law versus the variables being the different municipalities. But I think in some of these bigger cities, and maybe you can share your thoughts on this, that, you know, ever since BLM, some places have kind of taken more of a hands-off approach on policing post George Floyd, and maybe that's what's contributing here to the spike in crime. It's just this attitude toward police and changing police tactics.
I think it is, and I think the leadership that have gotten into some of these municipalities think that, you know, that they ought to be soft on crime, and I think you see this all over the country. I think some of these larger municipalities think that, you know, along with the judges, and I think the DA that we have is doing a great job, but I think some of the DAs and across the country and across the state, you know, we're incubating criminals. When you have somebody that gets caught, juvenile that gets caught doing a smaller crime like shoplifting or breaking into somebody's car, and you don't do anything with them, no intervention, no consequences, you take them home and drop them off on their mama's front porch, and mama says, oh, honey, don't do that again, you know, and they think that they can get away with anything, and that's what's happening. We're incubating with these juveniles. No parents are out there when they, you know, are in their lives a lot of times. And then also when they get caught doing something, they don't have any remorse or no consequences. So they go do bigger crimes. Next time they're going to go get a gun and kill somebody or shoot somebody, or, you know, And I think that's the problem. I think it's we're lax on these juveniles, and I think what we need to do is mandatory a 2-hour intervention with the state, with our guys instead of the city guys. I think they need to spend a few hours behind bars to feel, see how it feels. And I think we need to track them. Since COVID, there's a lot of them that aren't even in school. And like I say, a lot of times there's only a single parent, if any, in their life, you know, and a lot of our teachers now are not reporting a lot of things, you know, and they don't expel them because they're afraid they're going to lose that money. And so the schools don't have any consequences on them. You know, used to we'd wear their butts out, and then mom and daddy would wear them out when they got home. But
right
now you can't even spank them. So I think that this whole society incubates in the younger part. And until we can get a handle on that, I've been working on a bill for a couple of years to where they would spend a little time in there. And every crime, they would have to be turned in. And nobody can bail them out except their guardian. Now you have some of these juveniles that are being bailed out by other gang members, you know. And the bail bondsman, you are more of a loan shark. If it costs you $1,000 to get out, you've got $100, well, they're going to loan you the money, and they'll charge you 29% interest weekly or daily, you know. And it's just a lot of things need to be fixed. And that's the reason I've asked the governor to let's have a special session on just crime, because we're having to build new prisons. We're putting more than $1 billion in one facility. And you know, it's just, we can't even, the judges can't even get them through the system. In Montgomery, Alabama, we've got over 300 waiting for murder, over 300 trials waiting. And they're having more murders than they can incubate, I mean, than they can try out. So it's just growing. It's never going down. The number hadn't been going down in a year and a half, 2 years.
Representative, well, I'll just say we're a little short on time, but go ahead and wrap it up.
Yeah, so I just think that, you know, I think everybody ought to have the right to carry a gun. I don't want to touch constitutional carry. I supported it. I voted for it. I think we need to fix it at home, and I think it needs to be fixed in these municipalities. Need to get their act together and start, you know, enforcing the law.
Representative, we appreciate your time. Let's talk again soon. Thanks for coming on this morning.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Reed Ingram, ladies and gentlemen, he's a lawmaker from Montgomery County. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Forrest Show on FM Talk 106.5. I'm sure.